Welcome back to another edition of the Future Sox podcast. My name is Elijah Evans, joined by my co-host Dylan Barnes. We are in this kind of off-season waiting period, that's for sure. We were talking earlier, like, what are we talking about today in terms of the White Sox? And then we got a pretty funny, interesting rumor about an hour and a half ago. We also just going to talk about some trade packages. There's some White Sox players that just kind of don't have a spot on this team heading into the year. It's going to be an interesting situation as we kind of approach spring training and a month from now, pitchers and catchers report for the White Sox in I think exactly 30 days from today. So things are right around the corner, but for the time being, we are definitely in this waiting period where we're just kind of waiting for stuff to happen. But we're going to go through the rumor we heard today, a couple guys who are trade candidates and where they could be, you know, potential partners for a trade. Then we're going to talk a little bit about the Fangraphs top 30. We haven't gotten around to it yet. We've been, you know, it was from December, but just kind of go through that top 30, top 37, I guess. Fangraphs doesn't do a top 30, but talk through that, you know, top prospect list a little bit and just our opinion on guys that were, you know, a little bit higher or lower on that list compared to the norm. Dylan, my man, what's going on?
Nothing much. It's been a good weekend for the city of Chicago. Obviously, the Bears pull out that.
I should have started with that.
Yeah, we really should have. I mean, that was one of the greatest football games I've ever watched. And then the Cubs get Bregman. I feel like we should talk a little bit about that, given the fact that that was a big fish guy that the Cubs went out and got. You know, there's maybe some questions about where it fits in with Matt Shaw and Nico Horner. Horner is obviously he's been a trade candidate for the past like two seasons now, and it feels like now might be the time where they ship him out. I've seen the Yankees listed as one of the teams that are interested in him, but I feel like one of Horner or Shaw has to be on the move, and I would not be shocked if it's to the Yankees.
Yeah, the Cubs market is fascinating, man. I talked about the Casey Edward trade last week on the call up, and we had a clip that did really well, and it got a lot of Cubs fans angry with me because apparently I'm a little delusional there, and I get it. Like, I understand where Cubs fans are coming from. I just think that you committed a lot of money to a guy, and that's a signing they should be making. I do think that Bregman's a signing you should be making, but you committed a lot of money to a guy that then slots into your infield and forces you to trade either Matt Shaw or Nico Horner. You're not going to have one of those guys. You know, you're not going to have Matt Shaw riding your bench. I understand he had a subpar rookie season, but like, there's too much value there for Matt Shaw to be a rotational backup infielder at this point, in my opinion. So I think that the Cubs are in a really unique spot, and you know, it now makes sense. I think obviously the trading of you're one of your top prospects for the sake of getting a pitcher makes a lot more sense if you know you're about to sign a guy to, you know, a 5-year, $175 million deal. So I understand it. I see the vision there for a lot of, you know, why the Cubs are doing what they're doing. It's going to be really interesting to see kind of how that shakes out going forward and what their roster looks like come opening day, because there's still some question marks there for sure.
Yeah, you know, every time I look at the Cubs rotation, I'm kind of just like, is this team really good enough to win the NL Central? I mean, the Brewers do it somehow every year with a group of just ragtag throw together, and they go out there and win 95 games in the NL Central. And it seems like every year the Cubs just sort of collapse down the stretch. They start off hot, and then, you know, you look up in September and the Brewers somehow are 10 games ahead of them. So I don't believe in that rotation, because a lot of them have been good in the past, but it's more so if it gets bad for that rotation, it's going to get really bad really quickly, because there's not one arm that I really trust to go out there and shove for seven innings every fifth day and go one earn, two earn. So
yeah, I don't disagree. I think that the roster is good over on the other side of town. I have a hard time quite seeing it as a World Series roster. Maybe there's a couple more moves to come. Maybe it's at the deadline, right? But it's going to be interesting. And then again, if they end up trading Nico Horner, I don't know if they're going to be very happy about that in terms of the fans, right? So, we'll see what happens. I think it's going to be an interesting season for both sides of Chicago. And, you know, 100%. I know we're talking about the wrong team right now, but yeah. It is interesting to consider, because they have been the focal point of, you know, the market here the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and that sort of segues into our next segment perfectly. Luis Robert has been brought up in trade negotiations with the New York Yankees. John Heyman put out, I want to say, an article earlier today where the Yankees are sort of souring on the idea of bringing back Cody Bellinger. He seems like he's sort of priced out of the Yankees' budget right now, which is kind of crazy given that they're the New York Yankees. But in response to that, the Yankees are now sort of pivoting to Luis Robert. You know, we have seen Luis Robert floated to many teams in the past, the Yankees being one of them. We've seen the Reds earlier this offseason. We heard the Mets at the trade deadline last year. The Mets were still interested this winter. So, like, it seems like there's a lot of teams that have been interested in Luis Robert, and nothing has obviously gotten done, obviously, yet. But if the Yankees don't get Cody Bellinger, I have a feeling they're going to be one of the more willing teams to part with the group of prospects that Chris Getz and this organization would want, just given the fact that they're going to be swinging and missing on so many big free agents the past couple of years that they need to go out and make a splash.
Yeah, no. So the initial report from John Heyman earlier today was that they're, you know, exploring alternative options. Seems like the difference in negotiation with the Yankees is that Bellinger's camp, you know, being Scott Boras, wants 7 years. Yeah. The Yankees are only wanting to pay 5, maybe 6. So, you know, the difference in just like how you trust Bellinger to maintain high end production is the big difference there. So I think that the report from Heyman was saying that both Nico Hoerner and Luis Robert are options that are at least on the table for the Yankees. So I'm curious to see how that plays out because they're very different options. Obviously, Nico Hoerner would be like, oh, we got our shortstop now in New York, I think. I mean, I think that the assumption there would be that he'd be, you know, being moved and then paid like a shortstop rather than a second baseman with Anthony Volpe and kind of on the outs to a degree and people thinking that he's not the answer there, right? I think that would be the situation there. The Luis Robert thing, though, is interesting because they have Trent Grisham back on a 1 year qualifying offer, obviously. Yeah. Right. But what does it mean then? Is Robert, I guess it's maybe Robert in center grip, but Grisham has always been a positive center fielder. Right. So I'm just curious, like what it looks like. Obviously you've got Aaron Judge and you don't want to put Aaron Judge in center. I get that. Sure. Beyond that, like, what are you looking for from the Yankee standpoint? I mean, I get you're looking for a guy who has upside to become, you know, an impact hitter for the roster. It just, I don't know. I don't know if I quite see it from the Yankee side. I would welcome it. I would be very interested to see what was on the table in terms of a prospect return, but I can't say that I necessarily think it would be the best option for the Yankees attacking their offseason.
Yeah, I think that their sort of idea is move Grisham or move somebody to left field, whether that be Grisham, Robert, whoever, and then you slot in Robert in center field because I'm not really sure about how Trent Grisham plays center field long term. Like I know that he's been good like in the past, but if I had the choice between Trent Grisham and Luis Robert in center field, I'm probably taking Robert 80 times out of 100. So I think that if the trade does end up happening and, you know, Luis Robert wears the pinstripes in 2026, I think that he likely slots in center field because I don't think that they would be willing to give up what Chris Getz would want if he's going to play a corner. And I think that a lot of his value comes from his defense right now. Like, yeah, his bat has been worse than his glove the past two seasons. And you can say partially because of injury, but his defense has always been one of the best center fielders in the game. And that's even with injury, all that withstanding, like he can still go out there and put up like a 90th percentile outs above average for a center fielder. So I think that he slots in center field in the Bronx. And I think he plays a better center field than what Trent Grisham did this past year.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. I still don't think Robert gets moved. I think it's more of a deadline thing. I don't see any team matching the value that the White Sox are looking for, considering what he did in the second half for a handful of games before getting hurt. But like, I also just don't see the White Sox compromising and saying, oh yeah, we're just going to take a lottery ticket for Luis Robert. Right. So it's just a weird in between that you're kind of stuck in with his market right now. And, you know, I think from the Yankees, like, yeah, they got some pieces. Like there's plenty of players on the Yankees. I would welcome the possibility of being able to add, you know, in a, in a trade, right? Like, I think there's a lot of guys you could look at and say, okay, that's a piece that you'd be happy with for Luis Robert. I saw some Spencer Jones mentions earlier. I'm personally good on that. I don't think George Lombard's in play. Even the top two pitching prospects for the Yankees who kind of had a big breakout year is Elmer Rodriguez Cruz and Carlos Lagrange. I don't see either of those guys on the table as much. I think you'd be looking more at like a Ben Hess or a Bryce Cunningham probably if you're going the pitching route. Would be open to either of those guys. I'm a huge Dax Kilby guy. I think Dax Kilby would be an awesome get for the organization if that was even on the table, but I don't really see the Yankees trading their first rounder. Yeah, I don't really see the Yankees moving their first rounder who they just drafted, who, you know, I think is kind of that somewhat of a, obviously not quite this level, but somewhat of like a McGonagall starter kit type of profile. So yeah. I don't see it that happening. But at the same time, I think that there's, you know, there's a possibility there. I really think that the difference between where the Yankees are at and where the White Sox are at would be too much to overcome right now. If it happens, I'll be very interested. And I still think you have to, you know, if you're the White Sox, you have to consider moving Robert still if the offer presents itself. But I think the deadline is much more likely right now.
And I also just think that his value is going to get higher at the deadline. So like, yeah let's say that a deal doesn't work out. Yeah. I mean, there's obviously a chance, and you know, given Robert's track record, he might not be healthy at the deadline. So there is that risk. But I think that what we saw in the second half before he went down with injury, I think that that's sort of like what the Luis Robert in 2026 is going to be. And, you know, it might not be for the full season. He might miss a couple weeks with an injury. And if he can stay off the IL for an extended stretch of time and not miss multiple months, then I think that's a successful season. Like, Luis Robert isn't going to play 150, 160 games a year. Like, that's just a given. With the type of player he is, I don't think that any fan can reasonably expect that from him, and it's going to happen. But I think that the lineup is going to be better this year. There's more protection around him, which in the past, it was Luis Robert and nobody. Like, that was essentially the White Sox lineup for the better portion of the last year and a half. So with better protection around him and just staying healthy, I think that if those two things happen, the first one I think already has, the lineup is better than last year. I think that he can regain some of that value. You know, obviously not like to the extent after his 38 homer season in 2023, but I think that there is a decent bit that he can gain from having a good first 2 months, and then they ship him away at the deadline to wherever.
Yeah, I don't think there's a. I think it's fair. I think that you hope with a little bit deeper lineup and with more protection and more just energy surrounding the team, that Luis Robert takes that kind of step back into what he could be and what we know he has been in the past, right? I'm still weary, right? It's hard not to be weary after the last two seasons, and it's hard not to look at it and be like, hey, what do you? I mean, if he struggles again or immediately gets hurt again, like then you're at another sunken cost of the deadline, right? So like there is a world where the White Sox end up getting essentially nothing for Luis Robert when 2 years ago you would have gotten a four top prospect package, right? And that sucks. But that just is where you are now. You've waited, you've held on the last year or two with him struggling. Now you have a situation where, yeah, it's two more years of control, and we'll see what happens. So, you know, we'll see at the deadline. We'll see if it's in the next month. It's still possible for sure. So we will continue to monitor. But I think the Yankees are a weird fit, but I do think if they lose Bellinger, like maybe they're desperate enough where they pony up one of their top eight guys and it ends up working out.
Yeah, I think that Ben Hess is a name that the White Sox liked in the draft cycle. I forget which year he was drafted. It was either 24 or 23.
It was 24, I think.
Yeah. I know that the White Sox were linked to him in sort of like that second round comp area where they took Blake Larson. But yeah, if he was sort of like, I don't want to say the headliner, because he's not like, he's good, but he's not good enough to say like, oh yeah, this is the headlining star piece of this deadline. But he throws a bunch of different fastballs. It's sort of like a Lance Lynn type profile where it's like 70 to 80% fastballs, but it's a mix of fastball, sinker, cutter. So if the White Sox can get him, I wouldn't be mad, but I would also like to sort of hold off and see what you can do with him at the deadline. Maybe he's hurt. Maybe you can't move him. Then that sucks. Oh, well. But, you know, at least you tried. And the White Sox, especially in this sort of era of like still one, two steps away, I think they can afford to gamble on Luis Robert staying healthy for 3 months. and then getting a better prospect package than just taking some team's 18th best prospect and calling it a day, we're good. So I think that if the White Sox do end up trading him, I don't think that it's going to be for anything that's going to move mountains. And I think that fans have sort of come to the expectation with that. But, you know, let's say he goes out and has a great, I don't want to say great, but like a solid, healthy first 3 months of the year. It would not shock me to see Luis Robert go for a significantly higher price than what he is right now.
Right. Yeah, I think that's on the table. I think it's possible. So we'll see how that plays out. Two guys that we do think are going to get moved or should be getting moved here this year. It's a kind of a matter of when, not if, I would say, are Corey Lee and Lenin Sosa. Those are the two guys we've been discussing. We've talked about kind of multiple times now, like, there's just not a path to significant playing time for either of those guys. And you could argue there is a path for Sosa a little bit more, where it's, you know, maybe it's a combination of DH and second base or DH and first base once a week when Murakami's resting. Like, it's not, you know, it's not a huge sample. It's not a huge, you know, lane there for him to get more playing time. And then on the Corey Lee side, you're looking at a third catcher who is definitely worthy of being a backup catcher and is the quality of a decent backup catcher. And just if he's your third catcher, yeah, maybe he's on the roster for injuries. Maybe it's, I don't know, but I just don't think there's playing time there to warrant a roster spot and probably too much talent to warrant him being in AAA all year. So those are the two guys that we wanted to kind of just discuss and look at some teams that could be a potential fit here as we get ready for spring training in about a month from now. Like, you start to think about what teams are still looking to fill a hole, what teams need to add in a certain place that they haven't added yet this offseason. So do you want to start with Corey Lee or Lenin Sosa? What are you thinking?
I feel like Lenin Sosa is like the obvious one, just given the fact that he is the most obvious trade candidate on this roster right now, just given the fact that he doesn't really have a defensive home right now. You know, you signed Murakami to be at your first baseman. Miguel Vargas is probably shifting back over to third, and Sosa wasn't great at third base in the limited time he's been there. And then Chase Mydroth, Sam Antonacci, whoever is going to be at second base, I would take either of them over Lenin Sosa, at least defensively. Like, Lenin Sosa had a good year at the plate, and I think that's one of the reasons why we're bringing him up as a trade chip, is because he had a good year at the plate, and another team could use him. Like, I don't think that us saying that we should trade Lenin Sosa is saying that, like, oh yeah, he's a bad player and we just want him gone. But I think that another team is going to be willing to give up a piece that the White Sox can use. And Lenin Sosa right now, he's kind of he's on the outside looking in on playing time. And I brought five teams that I could see trading for Lenin Sosa. Three of them I think are, I don't want to say likely, but they could use a Lenin Sosa. And this first one, I've kind of like convinced myself into thinking that they're, I don't want to say dumb enough, but they're the type of organization that would try him out at second base. And it's the Los Angeles Angels. And it sounds crazy, but I don't even know if it sounds crazy, but their second baseman right now is Vaughn Grissom. And Vaughn Grissom is not good. And, you know, maybe they don't see Sosa as much of a liability in the field as the White Sox do. And, you know, maybe they want to try him out at second base, but I think that he can sort of fill the hole that that Taylor Ward left when they traded him for Grayson Rodriguez. But he's a right-handed bat who can hit for power and fills a hole at second base that Vaughn Grissom is, I don't want to say isn't an MLB player, but his stats and just his MLB time has not been good. And I think that the Angels, if given the opportunity, would like to upgrade there. And yeah, they did just sign Nick Madrigal to a minor league deal. So maybe that can, they can get the band back together of Lenin Sosa and Nick Madrigal. But I think the Angels would be a decent landing spot for Lenin Sosa.
Yeah, I could see the Angels. I'm wondering, I mean, the interesting thing with Sosa is like, I wouldn't count on being traded or just wouldn't count on the value being there is you look at a guy who, yeah, it's 22 homers. You like to see that. It was a decent batting average, right? The slug was all right this year. He was able to get into some power, but you got a 3% walk rate, chase rate over 40% for a guy like Sosa who, yeah, maybe the strikeout rate was in check. He didn't strike out a ton, but he's not walking. He's chasing everything. He's never shown much plate discipline in the league, if you know, minimal for sure. So I think that there's still a lot of limitation of like what you think you're getting from Lenin Sosa. He probably suits, you know, a team best that's willing to be DHing for, you know, sometimes, right? I think it's like, it's just hard to know. The splits aren't crazy, right? He's been able to hit both left-handers and right-handers fairly equally, but I still think most teams would probably rather have him in a weak side platoon where he faces lefties mostly, in a line to balance out a lineup with a lot of left-handed hitters. So maybe that's the Angels. I mean, I think the Angels are one of the examples where he could get, you know, more than weak side platoon at bats for the Angels, right? It could be 4 days a week, 5 days a week for the Angels. And maybe it's a combination of like, oh, he backs up first base and also plays, you know, is one of their kind of split starter at second. So I can see that as a fit. I just, the market's tough for him. And the reason that I say that is I just don't know if the value is even there to trade him. Right. Maybe you're like, okay, let's just keep a rotating backup, you know, a day or two a week at DH first and second base each, because there's no value for him on the market. I would like to think there's some value for a guy who hit 22 homers in the big leagues last year and is under club control for four more years. But at the same time, the profile's not that exciting, and he doesn't play a position particularly well. So that makes it tricky for a team to want to commit anything significant to that.
And a team that could use him as sort of like that DH strong side platoon would be the Texas Rangers. I think that lineup has, let me count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lefties in the starting lineup. And I'm just using Fangraph's roster resource page. Their DH is Jock Peterson, who last year was not great, a 76 WRC plus, and he's not getting any younger. He's 33, going to be 34 by the time opening day rolls around. But I think that if the Texas Rangers can trade for Lenin Sosa and sort of have a Peterson and Sosa platoon, I think that would work out great for the Rangers, and it would work out for the White Sox. But the Rangers could also use him at second, third, first. I mean, their first baseman is Jake Berger. Their third baseman is Josh Jung. Second baseman is Josh Smith. So I think that's a team that could use a sort of right-handed power bat. You know, Wyatt Langford is really the only one that I really trust to hit maybe 20 homers this year and post a WRC plus of above 110. I mean, Jake Berger, we've seen him mash balls is for the White Sox, Marlins. But I think that both of those teams, or I think the Rangers especially, could use a sort of Peterson and Sosa platoon at DH, because then, you know, you don't have to worry about Lenin Sosa dropping balls at first base or making a bad turn or a bad tag at second. So I think the Rangers are probably a better landing spot for him than the Angels, but it would not shock me to see either of those teams go out and get him.
Yeah, I can see both those. I'm looking through like the prospect list and trying to think about like where I see the value being at. And it's tough to pinpoint, because I still, like I said, I think it's still a very risky profile, but it is 4 years of control on a big league bat at the very least, right? Like, even if he's not the most exciting profile and you don't quite have a position, like, it's 4 years of a big league bat who hit 20 plus homers last year. Like, it's not nothing. So the Rangers, I think they have a lot of those like dart throw type of guys. I said this on the JB show recently, like, they have a lot of guys who are kind of a little bit of a dart throw, injured pitchers, you know, guys like Emilio Teodo, who was used to be a little higher ranked, Alejandro Rosario, you know, even you could go for like a Winston Santos. That's another one who's kind of, you know, some injury issues, but is interesting, at least potentially, you know, could be a good bullpen arm. I think that most teams would rather, though, instead of giving up one of those dart throws, would rather trade one of the close to the big leagues, AAA 26-year-old type prospects. And then for the White Sox, it's like, is that really worth it? Because you already have that in a Lenin Sosa who's younger than that and has hit its big league level already. So I find that I have a hard time finding like what the value is for Sosa, but I do think that the Rangers and Angels could both utilize him at least 3 days a week in their lineup if they were to trade for him.
Yeah, and I think that this next team is sort of in that same bucket of like, where does he fit in the field? Does he have a home? Does he DH? Whatever. But I think that the Reds are a team that have called the White Sox a decent bit on Luis Robert, and I think that maybe the White Sox have floated out a Lenin Sosa to them, because their DH right now is Gavin Lux, and a designated hitter is supposed to hit. And that was not what, I mean, Gavin Lux did post a 102 WRC plus last year, but if you told me that Gavin Lux was my team's designated hitter, I would not like that. And then they do have Spencer Steer, who has outfield experience, and maybe they move him back to left field, right field, whatever, and then Sosa can play first base. But I think that the Reds are a team that it would be another weird fit for him. I don't want to say it's the exact same situation as the White Sox, where it would be like, oh, where does he play? We don't have anywhere to play him. But I think that the Reds, they need hitting, and they need it bad. Like their WRC plus leader last year, it was TJ Friedl and Ellie De La Cruz, both at 109. And I want to say Sosa was at an even 100, I want to say. But I think that he could easily help that Reds lineup in that again, the bottom four in that lineup are, it's not great. Their second baseman is Matt McClain with a 77 WRC plus over 580 at bats. Like that's not great. So I think that the Reds could use a bat like Lenin Sosa. That short porch in left field is going to help him get up to maybe 25 homers this year. So I think that the Reds, they've called on Luis Robert before, and it would not shock me if the White Sox sort of turned around and said, well, no, but we have Lenin Sosa for you.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely imagine a world where that happens. I think the Reds have a little bit of a crowded offense, even if it's not a ton of production. So it probably would have to be accompanied by them clearing a roster spot from one of their, you know, younger to middle-aged guys in the league who like are kind of, they have a lot of guys. They just, I don't think they know how to exactly organize their system. Obviously, Sal Stewart's going to be a focal point for them moving forward, right? He factors into that infield. Christian Encarnacion Strand is still in the picture. They have a lot of guys. Maybe, I think so. I think he's still in the picture. They got a lot of guys to fit in that lineup. So I'm just wondering, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think those are fits for sure. I'm looking at the Reds system now, and I'm like, who's a Reds option? That's like, you know, who's a Reds prospect that's worth it? You could take a stab at like maybe, you know, Edwin Arroyo, who the White Sox have been rumored to be interested in the past, but has really honestly been a letdown in the minor leagues the last 2 years. So you're buying low on a guy. I think Hector Rodriguez would be a fun get. I don't think it's probably still past what the Reds would want to trade for Lenin Sosa. Maybe it's not. Maybe that's an attainable target. Or you go for a younger, you know, a pitcher with some upside. Julian Aguirre is a guy that I liked a lot. He just went at TJ though, so he's coming back off of TJ right now. There's a number of guys. I mean, Leonardo Balcazar is another interesting one who I could potentially see. Got traded, you know, he's been bounced around a little bit. He just got added to the 40 man, so he's probably not, because he was Rule 5 eligible, so probably not someone that is on the move. Maybe he is. They want to clear a 40 man spot. A couple names that I think could work there. I'm not sure how the Reds would exactly organize their infield, but I think they have that problem already with or without Sosa, so they're gonna have to figure that out one way or another regardless.
Yeah, I think that the Reds are sort of like the team that I looked at the roster and I was like, you could use Lenin Sosa. Like, yeah, you have a bunch of infielders that you want to make time for somewhere, but you also, none of them, I don't want to say are good, but like Lenin Sosa would probably be an upgrade on Matt McClain or Gavin Lux or Spencer Steer. So I think it just comes down to the fact that Lenin Sosa is, he did it last year. And, you know, a lot of these guys are sort of still in wait and see mode and seeing if they can hit. But I think Lenin Sosa is like, he's sort of that in between type where, you know, you can play him in the field, but he's not going to do well. And then my last two teams, I kind of just threw darts here. I said the Marlins and the Nationals. The Nationals, I mean, they need a lot of help, but I think first base especially, they could use somebody. I mean, Luis Garcia Jr. is their listed first baseman right now, but he played
first. What? He played second.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He played more second, but their listed second baseman is Nassim Nunez, who he had a little bit of a cup of coffee at the end of the year. Didn't produce great, but I think Lenin Sosa could be an upgrade over both of them. And like, yeah, the Nationals, they need a lot of help on the offensive side of the ball. And I think Lenin Sosa can fit in there perfectly. I mean, outside of Dylan Cruz, there's not a single other right-handed hitter in that lineup that I would trust to put up a 100 WRC plus. I mean, Brady House, their third baseman, 275 plate appearances of a 56 WRC plus. So I think that they could use another right-handed bat, and it wouldn't shock me. And then the Marlins, they're kind of just a team where I don't really believe, I don't want to say I don't believe, but like I look at their lineup and I'm like, how did you guys hit as much as you did last year? And their first baseman listed right now is Graham Pauly. I don't know if that's actually what's going to happen. I know that they've talked about Christopher Morel being there.
Some knowledge there on that front. It seems like Griffin Conine's going to have a good shot to earn that first base job now with Owen Casey in the picture in the outfield. So,
yeah, and then he's a lefty, right? I'm not imagining.
Yeah.
So if let's say you want to platoon Conine and Sosa, that would work perfectly.
Yeah. Definitely another one. The thing with the not as much the Marlins, more the Nationals. They're not in the business of trading prospects right now.
Right, yeah.
So the one thing with the Nationals is like, oh, you get a guy who's still fairly young and, you know, at least is an upgrade in your lineup. You know, I think you could definitely make a case that means also an upgrade in the lineup when you're talking the same Nunez and the Brady Houses of the world, right? But I don't think they're trading a prospect, so it's probably more of one of those depth guys, which would be kind of interesting, actually. I think there's a number of guys you can make a case for in terms of what they're doing right now. You could look at a couple of their like relief arms, maybe, or just a depth arm. What are you thinking?
You could talk me into DJ Hurz, and I would love that.
Oh, they wouldn't do that. They like DJ Hurz. I don't think the Nationals would do that. Yeah, I don't think
that's unfortunate.
I think there's a chance you can make a case he's their second best starter when he gets back off injury.
Yeah,
pretty clearly, maybe.
I was gonna say pretty clearly.
I don't think that's on the table there. I think you could maybe try to pull like a. I don't know. I have a hard time thinking about who's the interesting name on this list. I think it's probably a depth guy of some sort. Maybe it's a, let's see, like a Philip Gasser type of outfielder who's had a pretty decent, he's 20. I mean, yeah. That's not an exciting return by any means, but a 26-year-old outfielder who could be in the bigs this year for sure. You could look at a guy. I mean, I think there's some arms there. Old friend Jake Eater is in the Nationals organization. Yeah. I didn't even realize that, to be honest. Not probably happening on that regard, but there's some guys. Mitchell Parker, I don't think would be the worst. I could see a Mitchell Parker as a guy the White Sox could have as a long relief spot starter option and see what happens. Yeah, no shot on Alex Clemmy. We got a mention of that in the chat. Yeah. I do not see that happening. It would have to be more of a depth, older, probably prospect guy that slots in and you see what happens. But again, it's a guy who doesn't fit in the White Sox plans. So at some point you just have to consider what is really the value there. And that's why I just don't think Winnie Sosa gets moved, honestly, because I don't know what the market looks like for him. So
yeah, it's just so tough because like a DH isn't going to get you much on the open market, and Lenin Sosa can play. He is capable of playing first, second, third, but it's not going to be great. And I think that's something that teams are looking at when, you know, they're trying to trade for him, is like, he's probably limited to DH, and he's a bat that can hit you 20 homers a year. But again, a 3% walk rate and a chase rate of above 40, like it's a risky profile to take on. Like, no matter how many years of control he has, it's a risky profile. And I can understand why teams would be not inclined to trade for him. But at the same time, there's a lot of teams out there that could use Lenin Sosa, and he would be an upgrade in their lineup, even if he regresses to maybe 18 home runs next year. But I think that him being like a sort of platoon DH with Jock Peterson, I think that is probably what a lot of teams view him as. And, you know, maybe a team views him as a starting first baseman or second baseman. Sure, fine. Let's see it. But I think that the likely scenario is he sticks around for a month or two, and then Sam Antonacci gets called up, and then a trade happens. That's my guess.
Yeah, I'm probably with you there. I think that's probably the most accurate.
The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent spent your life working for. My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
The other guy to talk about is Corey Lee. And Corey Lee is, you know, a decent catcher, right? Like, I think it's unfair to Corey Lee to be like, oh, Corey Lee doesn't have value, because this is a guy who would be a backup catcher for at least, I would say, half the teams in the league, or could be in that kind of conversation, right? So with Lee, it's tough because there's just, everyone knows the White Sox have two young catchers that are, you know, building blocks, right, and going to be on the roster no matter what. So you're trying to pitch he's our third catcher, but he should be your second catcher, right? That's not an easy conversation. So that's part of why I don't think that Lee has a ton of, you know, value in the open market right now. Then again, like, a solid defensive catcher who just put up a, you know, he was in AAA most of the year. He was up and down a little. He hasn't shown to be a big league hitter by any means, but he's a good defensive catcher. He has proven to be solid in terms of at least his plate approach, right? He's at least going to give some decent at bats, or at least this year he gave some decent at bats. We'll see. It's not a ton of value, but I think there's teams that either have no catchers on their, you know, major league roster right now, or right, definitely don't have a backup catcher. The first one that comes to mind, we talked about on the Just Baseball show. We were doing the White Sox GM episode a few days ago, and we mentioned the Phillies, and that was Aram's idea to send, you know, Corey Lee. And right now, the Phillies don't have a big league catcher at all. Not just like a catcher option, like, they don't have a catcher. JT Realmuto is a free agent. It seems like the Phillies are going big game hunting in terms of trying to bring in a Bo Bichette or a Kyle Tucker. If they're going to end up signing another big free agent in addition to Schwarber, they probably won't bring back Realmuto, who's the only, you know, clear starting catcher on the market at this point. That leads to a situation where they got to find some catching depth. And with or without Realmuto, Corey Lee would still be the backup, even if they do bring back Realmuto, right? So I think Corey Lee to the Phillies makes a lot of sense. RM's proposal was Gene Cabrera. I'm game for that, honestly. I actually thought that was a little bit more value than the White Sox would probably get for Corey Lee, but I get it. It is a catcher with 5 years of control, so there is some value there. Curious to see how that would play out, but I think the Phillies could be the one team that immediately is one of the few that stands out to me off the bat for a guy like Corey Lee.
Yeah, I mean, their two catchers on the 40-man right now are Rafael Marchand and Garrett Stubbs. I would take Corey Lee over both of them. And I like, let's say they do bring back Realmuto, I think that he would be the backup regardless. And if they don't bring back Realmuto, I think he would be the starter. Like, I don't think that they would want to play Marchand or Stubbs over Lee. But again, it comes down to, do they bring back Realmuto? Do they go sign Bichette, Tucker, whoever? And then, you know, I think that Cabrera or maybe they go out and get like a bullpen arm, like somebody to go fill in for the bullpen every, like, let's, it doesn't have to be like a leverage guy, but I think that a decent bullpen arm, maybe bring, he's not going to come back, but bring back Tanner Banks on a trade. No, that won't happen. But yeah, I think that the Phillies are probably the most logical destination, just given the fact that they don't have any catchers and Realmuto is getting older. Like, he's seen a significant drop off in his plate, his like production at the plate and his defensive skills as he's gotten older.
Yeah, two comments immediately about Nick Castellanos, because we've seen some things online flying around about, oh, you know, if you were to trade with the Phillies, Robert or, I mean, you know, Corey Lee, but nonetheless, Luis Robert, would Nick Castellanos coming back make sense? Like, I don't completely hate it. I don't love it at all, but I don't completely hate it. I just, you're pretty limiting your roster, right? I think that puts you in a situation where he's pretty much a DH. Maybe he plays some right field a couple days a week. I mean, if they think Castellanos can play a decent right field, maybe, but it really doesn't seem like he's at that point in his career where he's going to be playing much right field. So then maybe you get a day or two a week of right field from him. You get a couple days a week at DH instead of the catchers or Benintendi, though. Like, you already got three guys potentially rotating in at DH. I think if you can get that, I mean, the CBA pick someone mentioned as well, which would be kind of right after the first round, that could be something that entices you to take a core, you know, Nick Castellanos back. It would still have to be the Phillies eating a decent amount of that money in that contract, I would have to think.
It's sort of like he's outfield Lenin Sosa, where, you know, he doesn't really have a home and he's likely going to be a DH for whatever team he goes to. But I don't think that Castellanos really fits on this team, because let's say he's the DH for 4 days a week. That's taking at-bats away from one of Edgar Caro, Kyle Teal, Munetaka Murakami, whoever is DHing or whoever's not catching or playing first base. And I wouldn't really want to do that for, I mean, he's what, $25 million a year? And I forget how long he's under contract for, but it would be interesting. And I'm not saying that you absolutely shouldn't do it, but he was rough last year. It was almost 600 plate appearances of a 90 WRC plus and pretty horrendous outfield defense. So
yeah, I mean, this is his final year of the contract he's on. Oh, okay. Philly. Well, so
it's not horrible, but again,
on a final year, it's a little more manageable.
You're taking away at bats from one of Lee Teal or Caro, and I'm not really sure I would do that. Let's say they do go out and get the what is it, 36th overall pick. I'm hesitant on taking at bats away from young players in exchange for giving Nick Castellanos playing time at DH. So I wouldn't say I would welcome it, but if that was the deal, Castellanos and the 36th overall pick for Corey Lee and whoever, I wouldn't hate it, but I would also just be sort of like, well, what's going to happen with Lee or God, I keep saying Lee with Teal or Caro.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Phillies are just one option there. I'd rather it be for either, you know, a depth arm or a dart throw of a prospect probably.
Yeah.
The flip side, a couple other teams I was just thinking of. I think the Giants could make some sense. You got Patrick Bailey, obviously, but Corey Lee, I think, could be a sufficient backup catcher there. Right now, they've got Daniel Susak, a Rule 5 guy, as their backup catcher. I think Corey Lee's a bit better. I don't know what the Giants – it'd probably be another situation where you're looking at a depth pitcher, most likely, in a Corey Lee trade. I think it would be probably a guy who can eat you some innings. We talked in the JB show about like a Hayden Birdsong, maybe it's Lee and you attach a piece to Lee to get like a Hayden Birdsong. Maybe it's a Carson Wisenhunt. Like there's a number of kind of those five starter long relief guys in the Giants organization that could make some sense, where the White Sox would be like, okay, this is a guy that could, you know, start a couple games at the beginning of the year. It could be a depth piece, right? Can do some things, right? I mean, if you could get a little bit more of an exciting prospect, great. We'd love a Parks Harbor, one of my favorite underrated prospects in baseball right now. But there's a number of guys I think the Giants could fit there. Padres is another one that comes to mind, where I just like don't think the Padres have much going on. Obviously, they have Freddie Fermin. They've got the corpse of Luis Campusano. I don't know what exactly is going on there. They had Martin Maldonado last year. Do they still have Martin Maldonado?
I don't know. He retired.
I don't think so. Yeah, he retired, right? So I don't think you've got much there. I think, you know, when you look at their depth chart right now, it's Freddie Vermeen starting. It's, yeah, Campy off the bench. I think they would welcome a Corey Lee instead of a Luis Campusano at this point. So maybe it's a Corey Lee, Freddie Vermeen platoon. It's kind of gross, but, you know, it's something. The Padres, you never understand. The Padres direction is always going to be we'll see what happens when it's AJ Preller. But, you know, I do think that can make some sense. You know, the system is not one of the better systems right now, but they'll replenish. You can get a young, that's probably a team you'd get more of a dart throw than a depth guy. I think that would be kind of a lower level lottery ticket type piece. Hey, you know, the Padres got a nice lottery ticket from the White Sox once upon a time. So we could have it go the other way for Corey Lee. You never know.
Yeah. I think that the Padres are sort of like a team that is always they're looking to get better, but then neglect some holes on their roster. And I think catcher is sort of one that they've punted the last couple of years. And, you know, maybe they try and punt it again, but I think that Corey Lee he might start 120 games for him. Maybe not 120, but like it's Freddie Fermin, and yeah, he's a good defensive catcher. And I think that he's a serviceable big league player, but Corey Lee can probably play 70 to 90 games for him and be that right-handed power bat at the catcher position. But I like all three of those teams, because all three of those teams are catching needy, and the White Sox, Corey Lee doesn't really fit anywhere. And like, yeah, we saw him play left field for an inning and he dropped a fly ball. But I think that Lee is best utilized as that backup catcher, and the White Sox aren't going to be using him for more than a day a week on like the off chance where you have to burn the DH spot and then Corey Lee, or you have to burn the catcher to pinch run or whatever, and then Corey Lee has to catch. So I think that Corey Lee will get traded with the addition of the Drew Romo. Is that his name?
Drew Romo added off waivers this week. Yeah.
So I think that a trade of either Lee or Sosa is, I don't want to say going to happen, but if it did happen, it wouldn't shock me in the slightest at all.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the Padres is one that I like for Corey Lee. There's a number of guys, I'm just looking through their system right now. There's a number of, you know, experienced arms I think could be like a good, you know, spot starter and or reliever, depending on how you kind of target these guys and what you see for their future, right? I think San Diego makes a lot of sense. San Francisco as well, another option. So my ultimate thinking is that if anybody gets moved in this whole roster we've talked about, it's probably Corey Lee. I just think that the Caro Teal rumors were never going to happen this offseason, at least it's way too early for that. Maybe you want Lee as like the foolproof if like you end up deciding next year to move Caro or Teal, maybe, but then like you've got Drew Romo, who's, you know, fine defensive backup, right? There's options there, but I do think that Lenin Sosa probably sticks around. I think Luis Robert probably sticks around. This is at least until the deadline. If somebody's going to get moved here in the next 2 months, I see Corey Lee as the most likely. But again, there's not a ton of teams, but you know, catching depth is always somewhat valuable, even if it's not a super exciting depth piece, right?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why the White Sox went out and traded for Kyle Teal when they already had Edgar Caro, is that you can never have too many catchers. Like the difference between a backup catcher and a starting catcher is it's pretty significant. And for the White Sox, like, yeah, you have two starting caliber catchers, but then Corey Lee is a backup caliber catcher. Maybe he develops into a starting caliber one, but he's not going to see the field for the White Sox. So I think he's an interesting dart throw, not even a dart throw, but just a guy who some team is going to be willing to take a chance on and have him play 60 to 80 games for him.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there. Before we wrap, let's quickly go over the Fangraphs top prospect list for the White Sox. We talked through trade propositions. Now let's talk a little bit about the Fangraphs list. If you didn't listen already, to people that listen to us frequently, James and Ian on yesterday's show talked about the Baseball America's new, you know, top White Sox prospects list. We never got around to fully talking about the Fangraphs list. They mentioned it a little last night as well, so definitely check out our last episode with James and Ian. But it's focusing more on the Fangraphs one, which is James Fegan, who does a great job for Sox Machine and is, you know, one of the, you know, the White Sox beat reporters. He does the Fangraphs list, or he did this recent Fangraphs list in terms of their top prospects. A couple things that just stand out off the top. I mean, Caleb Bonnemer, number one, right? I think that's a lot of people have mentioned it. We've mentioned it. It's definitely been kind of in the ether of possibilities. But he, I think, is one of the first places to actually list Bonnemer over Noah Schultz. Goes Bonnemer number one, Noah Schultz number two. Where are you at with the Bonnemer versus Schultz as we talk? I mean, this is a longer conversation for another day, but generally, where are you at with the Bonnemer versus Schultz?
I mean, when we did our re-rank of the top 10, I had Bonnemer number one over Schultz.
Yeah.
So I agree with him. I could see a case for Bonnemer, Schultz, or Braden Montgomery all taking that number one spot. And right now, I would say Caleb Bonnemer is deserving of that spot. I mean, winning the Carolina League MVP at 19 years old and then, you know, getting a taste of high A and mashing the last 2 weeks of the year. I think that Caleb Bonnemer's arrow is pointed to the sky right now. And it would not shock me if, you know, we look up in July or August and Caleb Bonnemer is at like a 135, 140 WRC plus in Double A. Like, I think that he could really hit his way through the system this year and force some interesting discussions about where he plays for the White Sox in 2027, because I think that he's the type of player where you find room for him in the lineup, whether it be left field, right field, wherever. I think that he's going to hit his way up the system this year and force the White Sox to sort of show their cards on where they think he's going to play this year.
Yeah. Interesting. I think it's a fair take. I think it's close. I'm still not exactly sure which one I'm going to rank over the other come, you know, our full top 30 in March. I definitely have gone back and forth many times, but I do see them as the top two personally right now. So I have no problem with Bonnemer being one on this list. The first big, just I would say, shocker on the Fangraphs list is Christian Opper at four. Christian Opper at four is definitely aggressive, and I see, you know, why James kind of did that, and I can see the logic behind it. I mean, you look at a guy that's a left-hander who was pumping 100 in high A this year. Like, there's reason to believe Christian Opper can be a legitimate high-end starting pitcher in this league. For me, four is a little high, especially because you had Hagan Smith at three, Christian Opera at four, ahead of Braden Montgomery, Tanner McDougal at five and six. I think it's a little high based off of one breakout season. With that said, like, if you told me Opera's ceiling is higher than all those guys, I don't think that's crazy.
Yeah, I think that Christian Opera is he probably has the highest ceiling of any starting pitcher in the system. Like, this type of stuff that he has with the slurve, I think it's a sweeper. That's what he called it. And then the changeup is the pitch that I'm most impressed with. I mean, it ran a whiff rate of, I want to say above 50% or something crazy like that. It was graded out as one of the best changeups in all of minor league baseball last year by Baseball America. But he's just taken leaps and bounds from when he was drafted. And this year was his coming out party. And I would agree that he is ahead of a guy. I don't even know if I would rank him ahead of Tanner McDougal, but he's definitely top six. I can say that 100%, but I think that maybe four is a bit pushing it. I could see anywhere from that sort of four to seven range, but four is a bit aggressive for me right now, but he could make me eat my words in 2 months. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, understandable. From there, Braden Montgomery 5, Tanner McDougal 6, Billy Carlson 7. I wouldn't say, aside from Opera being above those guys, I wouldn't say any shocks there. Number 8, Jedickson Paez of the Rule 5 draft, Rays organization. I can't stand trying to rank Rule 5 guys because you're ranking two things. You're ranking how good of a prospect you think this guy is, and then you're also ranking the fact that they have to be in the big leagues. So it's really tough, and they almost don't belong on top 30 lists, in my opinion. And that sounds a little harsh, but it's really hard to rank a guy like this because, yeah, as a prospect, if Jedickson Paez had been in the White Sox organization last year, we'd be really excited about him. And we are really excited about him, right? But we have the knowledge that he has to be on the big league roster or he goes back to Tampa Bay. That knowledge of just even having that knowledge in our brain makes it really hard to rank him in the top 10 of a prospect list because you know there's a viable chance he's not even on this roster in the organization come opening day. Nonetheless, maybe he really struggles and then this ranking feels too aggressive. I think he's a top 15 guy in the system for me, even being a Rule 5 guy. I just have a hard time justifying him above a couple guys behind him, given that he's in that unique situation, right?
Yeah, just Rule 5 guys being on prospect lists, it's weird because like they're not prospects anymore. And if they are still prospects come June, if they're still prospects, that means that their former the team that took them in the Rule 5, they sent him back to the actual team. So like it makes no sense to rank a guy for 2 months and just have him there as sort of a placeholder. Like, yeah, he hasn't debuted in Major League Baseball yet, so he is technically still a prospect. But I don't understand the reasoning on why a guy who if he's on a prospect list this next time, it means that he struggled. So I don't know. I think that Paez is he's good enough to be that in that top 15 range, but 8 is a bit pushing it, especially given who's behind him. I mean, Fauci at 9, Antonacci at 10, and then Batista at 11. I would take all three of those guys over him. And there, maybe you could say, like, oh, well, polish is better than potential. But I think that I would take all of those guys' ceilings over Pius's floor right now.
Yeah. Thank you to Ian in the chat for catching me. I did say Rays. That's Alberto. I meant Red Sox. Appreciate it, Ian, for listening out for that one. I'm with you there. I think for me, like, I think you could make a very reasonable case for Paez as high as 10. You can make a case for him in 8. Don't get me wrong. I think you can make a stronger case for him at 10 than at 8. I couldn't personally put a Jaden Fauci or a Sam Antonacci below him right now, given that he, again, has only pitched in high A, right? He hasn't been above high A. He has to stick on the big league roster. Jaden Fauci was just your overslotted second rounder. Sam Antonacci, we've seen destroy double A at this point. Right. I couldn't put him higher than 10. I think he, for me, is probably in that 10 to 13 range. It's such a hard evaluation given that he's a Rule 5 guy, and it's just a tricky thing to try and decide and vary and just be able to pick what that is. I don't know. He's a tough. I'm going to have a hard time placing him. A couple other guys just in that next range. We don't have to go into the whole list, but yeah, we mentioned Fauci, Antonacci, Aldrin Batista at 11. Then you got Kyle Odese, Mason Adams, Kai Bush, Juan Carella, William Bregoia, Haral Perez. I just, why are we ranking Kai Busch still? I don't get it. I really have a hard time understanding how Kai Busch is still on top 30 list, nonetheless in the top 15 of some lists. I get he's still eligible. First of all, I just have a problem with guys that debuted and then got injured and had TJ and then are coming 2 years later, coming back and are still on a prospect list. I don't see it. I don't think he should be on this prospect list, nonetheless in that spot on it. I have a hard time seeing that one. Some of the other ones, I think, yeah, I think Lodis, Adams, Carella, all in that range. My opinion, I'm going to have Haral Perez a lot higher than 17. I think the way he hit last year, it's hard. I couldn't put him below a handful of those guys just because he raked last year. And he raked as a young, you know, at the time he was 20 all of last season and raked in high A. He's going to be 21 in double A this season and has done nothing but hit in the last 2 years. Like, yeah, it's probably a second base only profile. I don't think he's playing shortstop anymore at this point, given the organization too. He doesn't need to be, but there's a lot more there with the bat, I think, than some of the other guys. I think 17's a little low for Perez. The rest of those rankings to me make a good amount of sense other than Busch and Perez there.
Yeah, I think Perez, I had him at 10. He rounded out my top 10 when we did our top 10 recap in, I want to say it was December when we did that. But yeah, I mean, Kai Busch is 26 and yeah, he's coming off surgery and he is technically still a prospect, but a 26-year-old, the upside is so limited for a 26-year-old coming off of Tommy John that like, it makes no sense why a 21-year-old who hit 20-plus homers last year in high A is lower than him. And, like, yeah, you can say, oh, the floor is higher than Perez's, so that drags him up. But is it really? I mean, a 26-year-old coming off TJ who didn't really have the best pro debut when he was healthy and pitching, I just struggle to see why he is more worthy of a top 15 spot than Haral Perez or even a guy – just like looking down the list, like George Walkow at 25, like, yeah, maybe, but like I would take the gamble on Walkow being like 80th percentile and him being an everyday big leaguer over maybe Busch being a long reliever and coming back being healthy and showing the exact same stuff that he did pre-injury. So I don't think that a 26-year-old should be on top prospect lists. And to make matters worse, Tanner Murray and Zach Franklin, both 26 and 27, are 18 and 19. And then Duncan Davis slots in at 26.8.
Yeah. So, and I think a lot of prospect list Fangraphs particularly will often value like likeliness to be a big leaguer versus like the upside swing guys that are in rookie ball, right? So you see a run of four straight AAA guys there, 18 through 21, and then a bunch of rookie ball, A ball guys following that up until, you know, 22 through 27, right? So I get the more likely to be a big leaguer versus guys that might not even ever reach the big leagues. I'm still going to take the upside swing of a Blake Larson or a George Walkow over a bunch of those other pitchers who I don't see having more than, you know, depth bullpen guy upside, right? I'm going to always side with a young upside starter profile or a upside young raw outfielder over the profile of a, you know, an older relief pitching prospect who's in AAA. Like, I don't like ranking relievers. I'm not sure. I don't really think that makes a ton of sense. I think if you're going to rank a reliever, it should be, you know, the guys that could be a closer, not the guys who can just give you depth out of the bullpen. Right. That's just the way I look at prospect evaluation, but everybody has their own way of looking at it. I think this is a really strong list overall. And one that I like checking out, and it's good to see a difference of opinions. I mean, you've got some guys on this list that are not on any other lists, and you're going to have some guys on my list and your list and the Future Talks list that you don't see on some other lists too. So I think the ones that stick out to me though, in that back half of list that I would have higher personally is Blake Larson, George Walkow, and maybe even a Landon Hodge as well.
I would have the guy sliding in behind Landon Hodge on this list, Mathias Lacombe, 27 on this list. I would have him.
He's 11 at BA, which is also very aggressive.
I think a sweet spot in between those two, maybe 16 through 19 is about where I would have him. But I mean, the stuff that he showed in the complex was really good. And like, yeah, age isn't on his side, but he's got the type of stuff where he can carve up the lower levels and just fly through the system. And maybe it's a debut in 2027 when, you know, he's got that innings load built up this year, because I think that's sort of the outlook for him this year is sort of just throw as much as you can without getting hurt and still show the same caliber stuff you did last year. But
right.
a guy like Lacombe, Is it Lacombe or Lacumbe?
I'm not going to try to act like I know. Yeah. Ian's probably a better bet. Ian's in the chat. He's probably a better bet than we are. But
yeah, either way, however you want to pronounce it, I would take him over any of the guys ranked above him that are 26, 27. And then an interesting name that I've seen on the back half of this list is Grant Umberger at 36. He might crack my top 30. Like, he was really good for Canny and even in Winston-Salem, he was pretty good. So I think that, like, yeah, he's 24, but I think that, again, he's also the type of guy where he has the stuff to carve up the lower levels and sort of move pretty quickly.
Yeah, I could see it. I mean, purely on results, you could make a case for him to be even higher than that. Obviously, it depends on what you value results versus stuff there. He's an older prospect, 24 years old. He pitched most of the year in single A, right? But I think that's another one that's interesting. Carson Jacobs, I'm glad to see him crack the list at the very last spot on this list at 37. That's a guy who, if you're talking relievers, I think Carson Jacobs is a more exciting reliever than many guys listed above him on this list. Personally, I think if you're talking pure upside, like, he's one of the three or four highest upside relievers in the organization. So a guy that I don't like ranking relievers. If I rank a reliever, there's going to be max two relievers on my list personally. Yeah. If you're going to rank them though, I think Jacobs deserves to be in consideration with just about anybody else.
Yeah. Little note, on Umberger. I did not know that he could hit 96. That was a note in his because there's the full 37 list.
The write-up,
scroll
yeah.
down farther. Yeah, the write-up. He's got him sitting 91 to 95 and topping 96. I thought he was more of like a low 90s, even high 80s type of guy. But if he can get that velo to consistently be like a 94 to 96, I think he could really have a big year. So I did not know that he was hitting 96.
Thought he was sitting 91, 92, but I guess maybe he's gotten up there a handful of times. So that's good to know. But that's all we got. That was a good run through of everything. Obviously, trade destinations, talk the Fangraphs top prospect list. I think we should do a mailbag soon. I don't know. I was thinking about how we should do. We're killing time for a couple weeks here. Not that we don't love talking to everybody, but definitely doing a little bit of time killing here. So at some point, Tim, we'll take some questions from you all, and we can run through a little bit of a mailbag. Hopefully we'll get some news. You never know. We're going to be at SoxFest too. We're only 2.5 weeks out from SoxFest, which is exciting. So we'll be in Chicago at SoxFest. We're going to be doing some shows there. Going to have some cool interviews coming up soon. Got a couple of the new coaches within the organization, minor league levels, that we're going to try to get on here to do some chatting with us. Hopefully some guys in the organization and the front office side of things, player development side as well. So make sure you're staying tuned. Everything at Future Sox, the Future Sox podcast at Future Sox on X. We are also on Instagram for those that prefer Instagram. We're getting active on Instagram. Our guy Adrian White is starting to cook over on Instagram at Future Sox. For Dylan at NotCease, I'm Elijah at ElijahEV8, and we will talk to you next week on the Future Sox pod.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. GameTime is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their GameTime guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the GameTime app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. GameTime.